I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Kate Thompson, the author. She's a great support and friend of the podcast, and she's helped bring episodes such as Dennis Brock and Mary Butwell. She's also supported us in this episode. Again, thank you very much. I'd also like to point out that this episode is heavily edited, so it doesn't necessarily flow like the other episodes have, but it's a great listen, and we really look forward to bringing it to you right now. My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter, but I'm also a former soldier. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that I'm desperate to document. Our next guest is a survivor of the Holocaust, having left Nazi Germany on the last Kinder transport. We talk about his childhood, his family, life in the UK, and his views today. We also speak about being a child refugee and the trauma of separation. Episode 45, Henry Glanz. This is Declassified. Henry, where were you born?
I was born in a little town called Zolynia, Zolynia, in southern Poland, in a place called Galicia.
And do you remember that time?
Not a thing. I was 2 years old when I went to Germany. Not a thing.
Can you remember the trip to Germany as a two-year-old? What's your first childhood memory?
When I was 4 years old, I was in a kindergarten, and there was a boy who always was dirty, and I put some soapy water on him, and I was expelled. He was the son of a Maharaja.
Oh, really?
I thought he was dirty.
Oh, really?
And they expelled me. he insisted on it.
Ah, the Maharaja?
The child cried, and yeah. I started to wash him, you're dirty.
Oh, my.
And he wanted to know us about, and he was apparently quite a posh kindergarten, and the Maharaja insisted that I was expelled.
What did your mum and dad do when you was that age?
It was preschool. I think I was 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
I think about four.
Was your family a middle class family? Was it?
My father was in textile. He was selling, so he was a commercial traveller.
Mm. Yeah. And what did your mother do?
My mother actually was one of the few women who had in those days a university education. For she was studying German and Russian literature at the University of Krakow.
Mm.
And she spoke she spoke apparently excellent free German. She spoke Russian. We had an old Jewish lady. I understand illiteracy is rare among Jews, I understand. But there was an old lady who was illiterate. And I asked my mother, she must have been about six, what does it look to her when she looks at a book? She took a Russian book and showed like this.
Was education an important part of childhood?
Yes, I went to the equivalent, they call it Mittelschule, a Realschule in German, the equivalent of the grammar school when I was 10. I learned English when I was 10.
All right.
And I was 4.5 years. And the reason I still speak with a German accent is because I was taught English by German teachers.
Yeah.
If I hadn't spoken a word of English coming here at 15, I probably would have spoken Cockney. I was married to a Cockney for 67 years.
Before we get there, what was the family makeup? So there was mum, dad, yourself.
Yeah, they're both in Berlin, Poland, my parents. Before the First World War, it was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm. What were their names? What was your mum and dad's name?
My father's name was, I think the Polish name was Mordzko, but in Germany he called himself Markus. My mother's name was Esther.
Do you have one brother?
I had one brother and one sister. My brother was 5 years younger than I.
What was your mother's name?
Esther. My name was Buchen, Buchen.
And your sister?
No, the German pronunciation is Gisela, and they called him here Giselle.
Giselle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was you a close family?
Yes, well, normal.
What would normal be back then? Did you?
Oh, we used to fight occasionally.
Yeah,
my mother and father had rows occasionally, and you may be interested in that. In the Russians in the First World War occupied that part of Austria-Hungary, of Poland, and it seems they used to exploit the women for their soldiers.
Mm.
So, my mother was born in 1891. But officially, it was 1898. Mm. My grandfather bribed somebody in the office to make her, the most was 7 years younger. And she was hidden, but during the Russian occupation, she was hidden in the attic because she was already at the time 15 years old.
The 1991.
I understand. Wait a minute. 1991, 01, my mental arithmetic is not very good. She was 22.
Yeah.
The most they could make her younger was 15.
Yeah, to keep her away from soldiers.
And she was in. To be sure she wasn't taken for sexual purposes for the soldiers.
Did you speak to each other as a family? Did you connect as a family?
Yes.
Did you eat together? Yes. And was you a loving family?
Yes. My parents were strictly Orthodox. Well, what they call moral Orthodox. My ancestors are what they call the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
With the sidelocks in Stamford Hill, my ancestors. My father broke away he was fighting in the Austrian army in the First World War. Luckily, he came out without a scratch.
Mm. Was religion important as a family?
Yeah, in our family, yes. We're strictly kosher at home, but... then, of course, for a long time, well, it didn't bother me much. I was bar mitzvah, usual thing. We used to go to the synagogue. Then I was in an Orthodox hostel here, and that was the Grich Castle was a Zionist organization. They trained us because the British didn't allow people, it was anymore in Palestine. You heard about the White Paper of 1938.
No, not.
Well, after Arab blackmail, all blackmail, the British stopped all Jewish immigration. We had visas to go to Palestine in 1938. It was about 1,000 of us. They were cancelled. So they allowed us to come to Britain again, join the cadet transport.
So in 1930, let me just think, just let me get this in my head.
38.
If we go to that time, 1937, 1938, you're in... Kiel in Germany.
Yes.
This is Nazi Germany now. When did you first realise, because you're a teenage boy, when did you first realise there was such people, an organisation called the Nazis? When did you first...
Very early, as long as I can remember. Long before Hitler came to power, there was that anti-Semitism. Well, Germany was famous for it down there. They used to give us the nicknames. For instance, there was another Jewish boy, and the Isaac, the name, nickname, they used to call him Itzik, Isaac. It's known him. Now they made an insult, so every Jew was called Itzik, except my name, I was called Henyo, my name was Hersch, the Jewish name, Yiddish name, but the Polish was Henyu, and that's what they called me. But I said my name is Henyu, not Itzik. So it was Itzik Blanz, and the other one's name was Bombach. Itzik Blanz and Itzik. And I was beaten up. My mother had to go a few times to put most of the teachers were anti-Semites. He said, I'll give you an example. Once during the history lessons, the teacher was talking about the high civilization of the old Germanic tribes. And then he mentioned, pointing to me, not the primitive Israelites. I told my mother about it down there. My mother said, tell your teacher it comes up again. We had a high civilization while my ancestors had a high civilization while yours still lived in caves. And I told him that. And she exploded. She said, you snotty-nosed Jew boy, get me by the ear and to the headmaster. But the boy's perfectly right, the headmaster said. I mean, they were barbarians, you know, the old Germanic tribes with the Rome, you know, till they occupied by the Romans.
Did you feel like an enemy when you were small? Did you feel like you weren't part of Germany before the war?
Yeah. Well, I never had German nationality. I had Polish nationality. And in Germany at the time, I don't know about now, in Germany at the time, you did not get German nationality being born in Germany. You got the nationality of your father. No, before the war, they were Austrians, but when Poland became independent after the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk in 1919, when they dismembered the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So the part, Galicia, where I was born, was in Austria-Hungary. Another part belonged to Poland. Another part belonged to Russia. So,
what did you feel then?
Because Germany and then Russia.
But you lived in Germany since you was 2 years old.
Yes,
you was a proud Jewish boy, but you were from Poland. What did you feel? Did you feel like you were Polish? Did you feel like you were German?
No, just feel I was Jewish.
Really?
Yes. I never felt I was Jewish. Oh, never. I don't know Poland. Poland is strange to me.
What was the family atmosphere like when the Nazis came in? What was it like at home? Was there any fear? Was there anger? Was there resentment? What was the...
The first, before Hitler came to power, a very well-known Jewish lawyer was shot. I forgot the reason why. And so I had relatives in America. My father had a brother in America, and they asked for the affidavits, they called them, to come. And for some reason, there was in family. He wrote a letter once, and I first ever seen my father cry. He said, "I don't know why you want to come here. Down here, they don't like the Jews either."
Really? So that was from America.
From America.
To come.
Yes, I met him. I didn't bring it up, but my sister had to. My sister lived in. There's another story, but she went to Australia. The British interned German and Austrian Jewish refugees. Did you know that?
I did, and I'd like to touch on that in a second.
Yeah, when you come to the ring, it's
yeah, because it's a really and it leads somewhere else. But if we when Hitler came into power in
30th of January 1933,
then from there, that 6 year period before the start of the war with Poland and then Britain. What was the difference? What started happening to you as an individual?
We had the discrimination. I was quite often beaten up. And my mother once, when I was badly beaten up of some of the boys, my mother complained to one, happened to be a Nazi.
So it was peers? Was it your school friends beating you up? Was it people in school or was it older people or was it police?
No, they were school boys.
Yeah.
They're school boys. My mother complained to him. So she said, I have no control. He said, surely you must have enough authority over the boys. He said, we don't hate the Jews because they are Jews. We behave before the way they behave in the country. Hmm. That sort of thing. So she walked away in disgust.
Did in the classrooms and in the schools, was there swastikas or was there pictures?
They had to set up, though, started to sing the Horst Wessel song. You heard about it, the Nazi song.
Yeah.
And
you did?
No, we weren't allowed to sing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you say, sorry to ask, I'm firing questions at you, but it's really difficult for me to understand.
You talk now before Hitler?
No, during Hitler.
During Hitler, and the boys...
You separated in the classroom?
No. No, when the teacher first thing she had to get up, "Hi, Hitler," that was the normal greeting.
Mm.
My father, during his travel, he went to a little village. You know, they used to buy things on easy terms. And he went to buy his packet of cigarettes. And as he got, a woman came down the steps. "Hi, Letla," my father said. "Guten Morgen." "Oh, guten Morgen." She was somebody who was normal. And my father bought the cigarettes. And everyone said, "Auf Wiedersehen." And she, "Auf Wiedersehen, mein Herr, auf Wiedersehen." She was so happy.
Did you see in Kiel, did you see kindness as well? Did you see, there's your drink. Did you see was people kind to you as well? Or was it all negative?
well, they were mixed. The neighbours, we had nice neighbours, but like the place where we lived in the first floor, well, we, after the Nazi boycotts, then how old was I? 1933, I was not, no, 24, 33. Yes, I was nearly nine when they came to power.
When did the feeling change and when did you start seeing children leave on the kinder transport?
No, the kinder transport started in 1938. And but we belonged to a Zionist organization, and we were training in a agricultural place near there to go to Israel or Palestine, it was then. Now to us, it was never Palestine, it was Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, and agricultural training. And then the white paper came out, I forgot what month, in 1938, they said, like, Britain giving in to Arab blackmail. You know, heard about the Arab revolt and so on. And our visas were cancelled. You'll have it all in the literature, I'll show you afterwards.
Yeah. And so the restricted visas, but then...
added to the kinder transport, approximately 10,000 Jewish children, not all Jewish by religion, because but Hitler, it wasn't religious, it was a racial thing. Mm. And one of your parents wasn't Jewish, you were considered Mischling ersten Grades, a mixture of first degree. And if you had one Jewish grandparents, Mischling zweiten Grades. Do you know any German?
I don't know.
No, a mixture of second degree. Yeah. The first one won eighth, so right, you weren't. They were called non-Aryans. Mm. And the children weren't all, some of them were Christian, brought up Christian, but they had one Jewish grandparents who probably converted, or not necessarily convert, and conversion didn't mean anything. Mm. And they were non-Aryans, and some of them were not Jewish. They just happened to have a Jewish grandfather or one Jewish parent.
And visas were, there was no need for visas for the children. So kinder transport is children transport. There was no visas.
But I don't know exactly the technical details. And all the passport had a big red J stamped on it.
Really? And when was the decision, do you remember when the decision was made to send the your parents to send yourself and the children out?
Two or three years before, my parents probably realized there's no future for me in Germany. A lot of German Jews think, oh, Hitler won't last very long, stick it out. And then by the time, because it was too late, nobody wanted him.
Do you remember leaving Kiel? Do you remember leaving Germany?
Oh, yes, I left it with a girl a year older than me, Edith Metzger. And we drove... There were just the two of us. And in Hamburg, we picked up Jewish children. We went on to Hanover, went on to Berlin. In the end, we were 180 of us. Then we got to turn around. In Cologne, we picked up the last children. And we crossed the border into Holland at midnight on the 31st, between the 31st and the 1st of September.
Do you remember leaving your parents and your brother?
My father went, you heard of the Kristallnacht?
No.
In 1938, a Jewish boy, Herschel Greenspan, I think he was 17 years old, when his parents were deported, something happened to his parents. He shot the German chargé d'affaires in Paris. And Hitler demanded he be extradited. The French didn't extradite him. And he was sentenced, to, I don't know how much, imprisonment. Well, and the Germans, they made an excuse, blaming the Jews for it. Mm. And that's when the synagogues were burned. Well, look at that. You look it up on the internet. Yeah. Kristallnacht, N-A-C-H, the Crystal Night.
And that was almost an excuse, was it?
That was they were waiting for an excuse. Yes, 8th or 9th of November. The night of the 9th and 10th of November, 1938, because we still use the Memorial Day. Mm. And the Hans I don't know how many Jews were murdered these days. But we didn't know that at the time. They only started with German and stateless Jews. They didn't start with foreign Jews. But we didn't know that. But my mother gave us some. Took my sister and myself. They were on boats on the Baltic. Take her on the boat. Gave us some money, and a package. And eat by yourself something to eat. Don't bother if it's kosher or not. And be careful when you come back. If you see any commotion, go to the station. Go to Flensburg, the border town in Denmark. And in Flensburg, there's the address here, and see that man, probably a professional smuggler, and he would get you into Denmark. Mm. But when my mother took my brother, and my father went on his own on the walk. Well, nothing happened. Everything was normal when we came back.
That's when you came back. But yes. The moment, do you remember leaving your mother, brother, and dad for
yes,
the first?
Yes, we took the tram down to the bridge, the pier where the boats went, and my sister and I went on the boat ride for about 2 or 3 hours on the boat.
Is this the Kinder transport we're talking about?
No, long before the Kinder transport.
Yeah, no,
by leaving my sister, that's why after the Kristallnacht, all Polish Jewish men had to leave Germany within, I think, 72 hours or go to a concentration camp. So my father went illegally to Switzerland. I believe that he had a Swiss bank account. That's the reason why. The Swiss caught him, and excuse my language, the bastard sent him back to Germany. Then he went to Belgium. The Belgians turned a blind eye. But the Germans caught him in Belgium. He was first. My mother was interned a few weeks after the war started. The women, all the Jewish people were left, the women and wives and children of the Polish Jews and the German Jews were interned and sent to a disused Jewish school in Leipzig. The former East Germany.
So your mother went there?
My mother went to Leipzig. Yes.
Your dad was caught
My dad was already in Belgium.
And he was caught by
the Nazis? He was caught by the Germans.
The Nazis, yeah.
By the Nazis in Germany.
And your sister?
My sister was in Britain. My sister was in Britain. I left my mother and my brother. My brother took me to the station. We were not allowed. The mothers or fathers were not allowed to go onto the platform.
Do you remember the moment?
I remember that. I remember my mother was crying, and I remember there was an SS man there. And I have got a video at home. I'll tell you about it later. An SS man, a Darby, and a woman there, probably a Gestapo, dragged me away. And I went on the train. And we crossed the Dutch border at midnight. The invasion of Poland was at 5 o'clock in the morning.
So you just made it?
Yeah, we just got through.
What did your mother say to you while you were leaving? Did she say we'd see you soon?
We'd see each other soon. She said, we'll see each other soon. And the vast majority of us didn't meet each other, and some did.
That comment, the remark your mother said to you, we'll see you soon, is obviously one of reassurance. You were a little bit older. You was a teenager. You weren't a very small child.
I was just 15.
Did you ever think about those words and play on those words in the months and, I suppose, the years afterwards, you know, that we will see you soon?
After a time, life goes on, you know. Mm. When I think about it, I get goose pimples or so. Down there, but I had to accept the fact. It wasn't until I'd have to tell you about Grieg Castle was sold. It belonged to an Irish earl.
Well, let's get to the castle then.
Yeah, what you know?
When you came into the, where did you get into the UK first? Where did you first land in the UK?
At Harwich.
And then from Harwich to Liverpool Street.
Liverpool Street on the train. Then we had a cab, and we had the cabs. Couple of dozen cabs took us to Paddington, and from Paddington we went to North Wales.
And then go on, then from North Wales.
Well, it was very run down. Apparently, it wasn't lived in for 15 years. There were toilets, but they didn't work. And we had to go down to the beach and wash in the Irish Sea. And it was September, and it was really getting quite cold.
Was there a few hundred children there?
Pardon?
Was there 200 or was there 400?
No, I was among the youngest, 15, 16.
How many children?
Altogether about 200.
Yeah, in the castle?
Not then.
Okay.
Not then. We gradually got other children who were here for a few months. But the first lot of us, and the Quakers looked after us, apparently, and the Quakers supplied beds. And the first three nights we slept on sacks for straw.
So the castle, what's the name of the castle again, please?
Grych Castle.
And this was the...
G-W-R-Y-C-H.
And it was in...
pronounced Grych.
How do you say it?
Grych.
I'll say it.
Well, like the Scottish Loch.
Okay.
Loch, Grych.
And that castle was in I'm a Celebrity.
A place called Abergele. Yeah. There's this town called Drill you may have heard of. To the east, I think, or else. And it was Colwyn Bay, and then Llandudno.
And the castle itself, was it totally run down, or was it?
The castle was smallest. Nobody lived there for 15 years.
Yeah, so there was rooms and things.
There were plenty of rooms, four floors. The boys were on one floor, the girls on the other floor.
And did people supervise you?
Yes, we had the men from Hamburg. His name was Erwin Seligman. I think he must have been about 6'6". He was huge. And there was the mayor from Abergele visited us, Jones or Williams, I forgot. He wasn't much taller than I was, and I was a fat man with a bald head. And he asked one of the boys from Vienna, how do you say in your language, I'm pleased to meet you? So he told him in Yiddish, kiss my ass. and he rehearsed him, and he said it perfectly.
Was it a fun time? Was it fun? Or was you lonely, or what was the feeling?
No, we weren't lonely, but we had lessons. We had a Belgian in charge, one man from Belgium. He gave French lessons. I couldn't get on with that, but friend never liked. I learned French in Germany for 1 year, but I couldn't get on with it. Mm. But in English, I took like Kiel was the war port of Germany, like Portsmouth. And every week we had sailors of different nationalities. And on the weekend, we used to practice our English with the sailors.
In Kiel?
In Kiel.
So that's why, So not only did you learn it at school, but you had some practice with the sailors in Kiel.
I was reasonably fluent.
Yeah.
But my accent is still from the German teachers.
You know, speaking of family, was your sister on your mind at this point?
I knew where my sister had her address in London. We used to write to each other. But I didn't see her for 2 years. What happened was the Earl Don Donald had to sell the castle. I didn't know why. I found out only recently he had to raise death duties. He had inheritance tax. Mm. So we were all going to different farms. Now, I didn't want to go. I wanted to go to my sister. I wanted to learn. So I was on my own. And I only had enough fare money to go as far as Birmingham. So they found me a hostel in Birmingham. And I went to Birmingham, and about 3 months, I got a job clearing bombed houses. And 3 months later, I saved enough. The committee found me a hostel in London, in Woolston.
Before we leave Birmingham, so were you 15 now in Birmingham?
I was
Birmingham.
15, but no, when I was in Birmingham, I was 17.
In Birmingham?
In Birmingham, I was... I think I got to London just before I was 18.
And did you find your sister?
Yes, my sister. I had the address. Yeah. I knew the address. Address in Willesden Lane, and I got a telephone number for my sister. I rang her up. I'm at 243 Willesden Lane, and she came and saw me.
And what was that like?
We didn't know at the time yet about our parents. We knew her father was in Belgium, but the last letter I had from my mother, she knew that I was my sister. And actually, Kate quoted it in one of her reports about me. She said, always keep together in faith and God will bless you, Sanji. My mother was very religious down there. And then the last thing my sister and I had from the British Red Cross, the letters came back down. The wording near enough was they were sent to an unknown destination and we'd have to wait till after the hostilities to find out, regret what happened.
Was this after the war?
No, that was during the war from the Red Cross. You know, they were deported to Poland. I had my call up for the Polish Army in 1944. Of course, the first thing I did, I wrote to the Home Office, I demand the right to join the British Army instead. And that took a few months. Then I was called up in, it was April already, 4 weeks before the end of the war. So they said, the war's nearly finished, no problem. The Americans, how is your German? So I said, normal, like I speak with a North German accent. Yeah, no, normal. So he said, the Americans want German-speaking personnel as postal censors when they occupy Germany. Would you like that? Oh, yes, please. That took another few weeks, and I was interviewed by the Americans, by a German-American, native German, probably. And I got that job. I was here 1 year and 8 months. We got British Army pay, not American, unfortunately, but we had the PX rations and all that, and that was nice. And also, they asked me, you had to write on the lat, you had to written in German, written in French, written in Chinese. So it went to the right place for the censor.
Mm.
And he said, can you read Yiddish? You know, my mother tongue was Yiddish. And I presume, I don't remember that, until I got into the kindergarten, I probably spoke Yiddish at home. And then I learned German. But I can... So I once... The rule was, anything smelling of Nazi underground activities to the American authorities, anything black market to the German police, anything uncomplimentary about the occupation, cut it out with scissors. I used to enjoy that. Anything suspicious in any way, like secreting special department.
And that was your job with the American Army, British pay, based in Germany. Before we go to Germany...
No, we had American uniform,
yeah.
UK.
You worked in a factory in Acton.
I worked in a factory in Acton called Portadown Radio, it was called. They used to do radio, but they made machine guns during the war.
How long did you work there for?
I'm 3 years, something like that. And that's what happened. You heard the fire watching?
I'd like you to tell that story, please.
Three people, or depends how big the factory was, had to stay behind at night and go onto the rooftops when the bombing was there. We were trained, they called a stirrup pump, and we were trained like incendiary bombs before they were to oust them.
Mm.
Most dangerous job, I know, people were killed, but we had a tin head over there. And there was a raid, and it was me, an Irish boy, and a middle-aged man went up there. The siren, the eau claire went, we went down, made ourselves some tea. Then the door opened, and a German airman came in. He was about my age, 19, and that Irish bloke was about 19, and he looked about our age. And the Irish said, he's got a gun. I went over to him and said, give me the revolver. Give me the gun. He took it straight out and put it on the table. And I put it out of Russia. And that Irish bloke, he was shaking like a leaf. He was bleeding, covered in blood. Straight away, gave him a cup of tea, made him a cup of tea, gave him a cigarette. I said, what do you do that for? My brother's in the RAF, and if he has to bail out, some nice German family look after him. He said, you're living in cloud cuckoo land, I told him, but never mind. And then we started to chat. He was there. How do you speak such good German? I said, I grew up in Kiel. I'm a Jewish refugee. And you look just like him. He was dark. In those days, I had dark brown, like dark chestnut color hair. But you look just like him. He said, how do you expect me to look with horns on a tail? Now, what are these anti-Semitic papers? Mm. Have you ever seen these
the propaganda.
They're horrible caricatures, noses like that, ears like that. I thought all Jews. Looked like that.
Amazing is not the right word. This brutal way of brainwashing people, you know, the youth of people, you know, the Hitler youth going all the way through, and just this absolute brain. So, a face to face and kindness. Why were you so kind?
I had some. I tell you about him. A teacher, Johannes Hagen, a marvelous man. Tell you about him. In Germany, they used to tell you, if you can't tell a Jew by the nose, you tell him by the stink of garlic. Why, I don't know. Jewish cookery, Russian cookery, or maybe Russian or French cookery, Jewish cookery doesn't use a lot of garlic, as far as I know. But that's what this. So I stood next to a boy in the gym class, and he said, "Herr Hagen, now, can I stand somewhere else? I can't stand the stink of garlic." So he slapped his face. "I have no control what you do in the Hitler Youth. You get it on case in Hitler Youth. In my class, you behave like a civilized human being." My mother, when she heard it, she couldn't believe it. If the boy had talked, not only would he have lost his job, he would have probably could have gone to prison. I was sexually abused by one of the teachers. I never told my parents. My father would have killed him. And he used to say, if you say anything to anybody, I see your father, I tell him you told me your father did it, and he'll go to a concentration camp. And this chap Hagener, it went on for several weeks. Hagener, what's wrong? They used to call me, my mother misguidedly registered me in school as Heinrich. That's why I'm calling myself Henry now. Heinrich, what's the matter? Come on, tell me. But I think there were rumors about him. I wasn't the only boy. And I told him, if ever that happened again, tell me again straight away. It never happened again. But when I was in the army, from Kiel, I went twice to Kiel, I saw Hagener. When I used to go to Kiel, they used to, some of the teachers come, "Can you sign this for me for the British authorities?" There was the British. He said, "No, I can't. I don't know about it." I asked Hagener, "Is there anything you want me to sign for you?" "Not necessary. My record is well known." When he was 50, they were short of teachers. They called him up and sent him to the Russian front at 50. But he got away without a scratch, luckily enough. He died later on. He moved his son to Dortmund down there. I saw him twice down. And I asked him, "Tell me, Hagener, how did you stop?" His name was Ericsson. "How did you stop Ericsson for the sexual abuse?" There was a rumor around to other boys. And he told Ericsson, he told him, "I'm not telling you, two boys complained to me about it. I'm not telling you who. But if there's anything like this again, I go straight to the police and I testify against you." He got scared. Mm-hmm. Didn't they? So I couldn't have been the only one. But there were rumors about it. Now, I tell you this again. I went to Kiel twice from Munich. I went to, I had a girlfriend in Germany. Kate mentioned it, but it wasn't Princess. And what happened was a gorgeous blonde. I was the officer and she was a dressmaker. And I saw down there, we used to wave to each other, what time, 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
And I met her. And when I talked to her, I mentioned about, she put them in, when people look Jewish, it isn't a Jewish look, it's an East European Ashkenazi look, family resemblance, because you're black Jews and brown Jews, the Jews from Morocco look entirely different, look like Arabs, and the Ethiopian Jews look black. It's East European Jews have this family resemblance, you see, but Italians look very similar, I don't know why. She was quite outraged. Again, you don't look anything like it.
You don't look anything like a Jew. A Jew supposed to be looked like. Is that what you mean?
When how people say somebody looks Jewish.
Yes.
Then you can tell sometimes. I normally people who
just,
know
just Jews, to confirm. So she was in the American army. She was She was this gorgeous blonde German girl. And you started 19.
Yeah. 19. She, I was told her I was just an American soldier.
Yes, okay.
That's all. Yeah. Now, she spoke quite good English, and we spoke English to practice English. And we became good friends, told her, and then she became interested. And I took her to a Jewish restaurant down there, which was, and she was amazed what good looking Jewish men they were. They thought they were all ugly.
So had she been part of the Hitler Youth?
She was, yes, she was, that's what I was saying to you. She was called the BDM, Bund Deutsche, they were the female of the Hitler Youth. And I saw, it showed me a picture of her with a swastika. And I got all, sorry, I said I couldn't, we got quite serious.
She was in a relationship and then she showed you a picture of her.
Yeah, we had, we went down to about 6-8 months. We go, we were quite intimate with each other. She was very nice, very good. I think it was 21. And I said, I could never marry her. Her father told me actually once, now, I don't mind her marrying a Jew, but at least a rich one. I said, well, I'll be rich one day, don't worry. That's it. Strangely enough, he let me stay in their house.
Really?
Yeah, very broad-minded. I presume he thought, rather than being promiscuous,
yeah,
this year's one boy.
Yeah, it's the but what did? How did that play on your mind? Then you're now. There's two lives here. There's this the post-war life where she's, you know, she's with you.
She was telling what happened. I showed the picture. I had goosebumps. I could never marry her, but I did not a very nice thing. I should have told her there and then it will never work. It will always be with me. That's swastika. I should have told her then. I waited till we had a silly row and I made an excuse to dump her.
Really?
It wasn't nice. But for, you know, 21-year-old boy. Yeah. And then her friend told me she was heartbroken and I told her friend that is the real reason, not that silly argument. Then you should have told her straight away, I know, tell her I'm very, very sorry, but it won't work.
Was you ever angry or emotional or upset about what had happened?
I didn't go, after the war, when I found out about the Holocaust, I didn't go to a synagogue for at least 30 years. I said if there were a God, he would have killed Hitler and Stalin and all the other now, Pol Pot and Robert Mugabe and Nkrumah. He wouldn't have allowed it. Now, I've asked a strictly Orthodox rabbi, how could God allow it? God must have had a reason. He goes in a mysterious way. I said, excuse my language, don't give me all that.
Because apart from your sister, your mother and father died in the Holocaust.
Yes.
Your baby
and
brother.
And my brother and uncles, aunts, all together about 10.
Are you quite matter-of-fact about that now, or is it emotional?
At first, to be telling you the truth, when I heard about the people complained about the bombing of Dresden, you heard about that.
Of course, yeah.
And they said Harris should have been tried as a war criminal. They say there was nothing there, military there. It was full of refugees running away. I forgot, 50,000 people got killed or something down there. I said, bloody good job. I said, they did the same to us. Why should we worry about them?
Dresden.
Didn't bother me at all at the moment.
Revenge.
Hmm?
Revenge.
Well, not right. So now I have a very close friend now, a German journalist who retired, Martina, who interviewed me 21 years ago. I was invited to Kiel on Holocaust Memorial Day. A memorial said, and there is a little town near Kiel called Rendsburg, about 20 miles, with one of the few synagogues which weren't destroyed during the Kristallnacht, which is now a Jewish museum. Mm. And they have everything about my family, and it was a special honor for my family. So I went reluctantly. And I was interviewed by the journalist for the local newspaper, Kieler Nachrichten. We became very good friends. She married on my birthday about 50 or 20 years later. And I said to her, pity we can't celebrate together because I'm making a big birthday party in my club. We are coming to London.
Mm.
And they came, and I was so worried that some people would get nasty, being a German journalist. No, they were all very nice.
Yeah.
down there. And but I don't never asked. Not my. She is not responsible for whatever her parents or grandparents may have done. But at the time, I didn't feel like that. Have you heard of the Stolpersteine, brass plate stones?
No.
Oh, that's what made me after. In the last 15, 20 years now, they put brick stones with brass plates outside the people who were murdered. Their names, where they were born, when they were murdered, the date. And my, this for my parents and my brother, were laid about 12 years ago, something like that. My wife had to go to hospital a couple of days before. My wife had quite a medical condition. So my son and daughter-in-law, who at the time lived in Switzerland, went there to represent me.
Mm.
I went 6 months later, and that woman and a teacher I met in the museum, which I called Hannah, a German teacher, also retired now, her job was to take children to the museum to teach them about the Holocaust. And a woman, a non-Jewish German woman called Frauke, who was the director. Oh, as a matter of fact, I sent her a long email yesterday. So she's quite interested. So I made quite good friends, which would have been impossible the first few years after the war.
Mm.
And I refused to speak German at the time.
Oh, really? Yeah. Did you see your parents and your brother's plaque, the stone? Did you see the stones? The plaques with your parents' name.
Yes, I went over 6 months later, and they were cleaning it. So people came by and asked for it. They told, "Oh, very sorry, what happened and all that." Down there. And last time I went four times so far. Some was a friend with her. I had a girlfriend I had at the time here, about 2 years after my wife died. When I said, "Look, a lady friend, not really." So. I was sitting there on my walker while they were cleaning it, and a gorgeous-looking blonde, I was partial blonde, in her 30s, Princess Diana likeness.
Mm.
What are you doing there? I told her. She started to cry.
Mm.
It says, it's happened a long time. He said, not that. But said, my grandfather was a sweet old man till he had Alzheimer's, and then he come out with stories he was boasting about what he did.
Mm.
I was shocked. And I'm ashamed to tell you. I'm ashamed to tell you down there. I'd like you to forgive me. I said, you're not responsible for your grandfather, I says to her. Down there, do you really mean that? She said, in English you say a load come off my shoulder. Yeah. In German you say a stone comes off my heart. So I said, Ein Stein kommt von meinem Herzen down there. Do you mind if I kiss you? I said, I love to be kissed by beautiful women. She gave me a kiss on both cheeks. I'll be able to sleep better tonight.
Finally, I ask Henry about if he thinks about his mother, his father and his brother and what happened in the concentration camps.
I was saved by 5 hours. If my train had been 5 hours late, I wouldn't have been here because I was only a small boy, I wouldn't have been any use to the Germans doing heavy labour. I would have been, you heard of Mengele?
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
Used to go left. Those, like the children went and wanted. And when I think about it, down there, well, like my, it's hard to explain.